Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what was the UPA or UPA in World War II Ukraine? Bojena Urbanovich was born into a Catholic family in 1934 in the far eastern area of Poland that borders on Ukraine. When the Germans invaded her town, her family was transported to Germany, where they, like many other Catholic Poles, were forced to work in slave labor camps. They eventually were able to immigrate to the United States, where she studied draping, fashion design and sewing, and earned her living in the fashion industry. The family never discussed their experiences during the Holocaust, and Bojena never intended to speak about them either. But her husband encouraged her to do so in 1988 after a Kristallnacht commemoration at her church. Since then, she's shared them with audiences of all ages and backgrounds, both across the United States and internationally. She begins her talks by saying, "I am a Polish Catholic Holocaust survivor." She says that many of her listeners, especially students, were not aware of the fact that aside from the 6 million Jews the Nazis murdered, at least 5 million others perished at their hands. At one of her presentations about what she calls the Holocaust of 11 million, she met Inga Auerbacher, a Jewish survivor who was born the same year as she was. They became friends and eventually decided to write a book, Children of Terror, about their parallel experiences. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. Your story is extremely interesting and extremely emotional, and I think it's a story that a lot of people are not aware of, people who were not Jewish who really suffered from the Holocaust. So I was wondering if you could briefly summarize a little bit of the story.
I can tell you, living on the border of Ukraine, in our area, we had many neighbors that were Ukrainians. They were not the Ukrainian nationalists, UPA. They were not part of it. They were just neighbors. We never thought that Ukrainians in our area would turn on us.
So who were you exactly? You were Polish
Christians.
Polish Christians who were living in Ukraine.
That was Poland at that time. Now the border has shifted. It's Ukraine. Now, Ukraine is Soviet territory, belongs to Russia. It's very dangerous now for us Poles in Poland. I'm an American, I'm a citizen, because Russia is so right on the border of Poland now.
That whole area was very much in flux for a century.
Yes, it's shifted often, you know. But we were surprised, you know, that the Ukrainian nationalists turned on us. And we didn't know at that time. My father had no knowledge that the Ukrainian UPA nationalists were making a deal with the Nazis, with Germans, because Germany was so powerful at that time. I mean, the best art came out of Germany. Everything, the music, everything. And my father used to say he couldn't believe that the Germans could do that to people. A nation that was so rich in art, in music, everything the best came out of Germany in those days.
So what year are we talking about? And tell us a little bit about your family background and what your family did.
We were farmers. We lived in the far eastern end of Poland, an area that's called Wolin. I'm the oldest of four children. Like I said, we were farmers. My father grew all kinds of produce. He would take it to the market, to the city, to Tuchin, a nearby city, and sell it. He even befriended a wonderful elderly man, a Jewish man, Mr. Friedman. We were the best of friends. What we talked about, how were your crops this year? How did you do with potatoes? How did you do, did you do well with cabbage? This is what people talked about in those days. They weren't interested in your religion or where you prayed. People, it made no difference to us.
So tell us what happened and how old you were.
In 1943, when we were deported to Germany, I was 9 already. I remember. You see what happens with children. They know something's going on, but they don't understand why this hate. Why are we afraid of each other, human beings? Why are we running away from the Ukrainians? Because they were the UPA, they were Ukrainian national. Oh, we didn't know that.
Well, I think that adults very rarely tell children what's really going on anyway, because they don't want them to tell anybody or whatever.
But life changed for us. I didn't, like I said, children don't know. My mother and father kept everything from us. The thing that had stuck in my head was when I heard the word UPA, capital U-P-A, in Poland before we were deported, and my mother was saying that Frank didn't come home. UPA got him. I remember thinking, I never heard that Polish word UPA. I didn't know. And they found him with a pitchfork in his chest.
So why were the Polish Catholics being deported? Could you give our listeners a little bit of background and tell us what happened to your family?
You have to remember that Hitler hated Poland. He wanted Poland. His plan, they found this later, Hitler's idea was to take over Poland, colonize with Germans, get rid of 85% of the Poles. The other 15 would be serfs. He hated Poland. He hated the Polish people, not for the same reason as the Jewish people. The Jewish people were first in line to be discriminated against. Hitler had such propaganda in Germany, but he did it very little by little by little, taking rights away from the Jews. They couldn't practice medicine, they couldn't be teachers, they couldn't go out past 6 o'clock, things like that. He really hated the Jews. They were scapegoats. The Jews were scapegoats.
But tell us concretely what happened with your family.
We had the UPA was destroying our village, both ends, burning and murdering people. We had to run. And like I mentioned in my story, how the Germans, when we were in Rubna at the railroad station there, how they pitted the Ukrainians against the Poles to kill each other. And when I checked this with history in Poland, they heard this before. It happened in other areas. Where were we supposed to go? We couldn't go back to our village. The Ukrainian nationalists were there now. Where do you go? Like the Germans said, come to Germany. We didn't know it was for slave labor. Who knew?
So how did that take place?
They rounded us up into cattle cars, took us to Germany. We were situated in Freiburg, Germany first. Children worked on a farm. The adults worked in a tannery, leather, a factory. I became very sick with TB. And they had to isolate me. That was scary to me because I didn't know why I was isolated from the rest of the family. Later they sent us to Chemnitz, Germany, slave labor again, but it was different. We were many wooden barracks enclosed with a fence. We were situated between Chemnitz railroad station and the munition factory that was operating 24/7. My father worked days, my mother worked nights. You know, Germany's at war. All young Germans are fighting the war. So where do they get slave labor? They use Jews and Poles and other people that they could get. They were building roads and tunnels and whatnot. Slave laborers.
So your whole family was together?
We were together until my mother was arrested and sent to Ravensbrück concentration camp sometime. I think it was 1944, maybe. Something like that, I think. I'm just going by the seasons, how we were dressed when they took Mom. I know that I wasn't in a sweater. I was in just a little dress when they took us, so it must have been warm still.
So what happened to your family then after the war? How did you survive?
We, my father, the four of us, the Germans threw us out of Chemnitz. They told us, now go find the American front.
So by this time, the Allies had won the war.
Mm-hmm. So we started to march. We didn't know where the American front was. We marched and marched for days, and we finally caught up to the American front. I remember Americans' UNRWA organization was helping us, and Americans put us in the German public school, and the children were dressed so beautifully. This is wartime. The war just ended. They were dressed, the girls with big bows in their hair, and they were made fun of us because we looked like rag pickers. They were making fun of us, calling us, "You Polish pigs, you Polish bandits." Now we call that bullying, right? So the Americans took us out of the school, and we were sent to a DP camp, displaced persons camp. And in our camp, this was in Karlsruhe, Forstner, Germany. That's where I made my first Holy Communion, which I don't remember that day at all. I just have a picture of me in my communion dress. We didn't know where Mom was. We didn't know. UNRWA organization helped us to get to America because my father wouldn't return to Poland because it's now communist occupied, and he had enough communism, and he was afraid to stay in Germany. He was afraid of the German people too. So UNRWA organization found relatives in New York. They sponsored us, and my father and four children came to America. Where's my mother? We don't know.
And this was when and what year?
We came to America in February 1947. And we didn't know, but my mother survived Ravensbrück. She was in a death march. I think they were pushing them towards Grossrosen, from what I remember from the story my mother told me. She was liberated by the Soviets, and she was taken to Poland. In Poland, she starts to search for us. We're in America in the meantime, by then. And she can't find us. She starts writing to America to a relative in Detroit, Michigan. Does anyone know what happened to Jane, my mother's name, Jane? What happened to Jane's children? She's looking for them. And my uncle, with whom we were living in Brooklyn, he said, "Of course, they're with me." So we started to correspond. I started to beg the communists to let my mother go. Yet, it didn't happen. I was hoping that she would come, so I proceeded and bought an airplane ticket. Oh, I even have documents at home now to get her out of Poland, communist Poland. My mother got impatient in Poland, joined some underground group, and they tried to escape. They were caught by the communists. She winds up in prison. I'm in high school. I know nothing. My mother writes to me, and she says, "Bożena, I have a new address." Little did I know, I'm writing letters to my mother, who's sitting in jail for trying to escape. Eventually, she comes out of jail with her papers. She goes to the communist headquarters to apply for a visa or ask what happened to her visa. And they said, "You had a visa. It expired. Where were you?" She was sitting in jail. So my mother showed them her papers, and the communists said, "You're a common prisoner now. You can't go. You're not getting a visa." So she sits in Poland, in communist Poland. I'm about to be married. I want my mother. And they're saying no. I got married. About 4 or 5 months later, I get a telegram. Arriving Idlewild Airport. August 15, 1957, flight time, signed, "Love, Mama." I go to the airport. I don't recognize my mama. She's all different. She's supposed to be taller than I, right? As a child, that's what it looked like to me. And she was supposed to have long, dark hair that I was learning how to braid. She didn't have that. She had short, mousy brown hair. She weighed 93 pounds at that moment.
A lot of time had passed, and a lot of bad experiences, too, but at least it ended happily, right?
Yes, and my mother and father were, you know, even though the war separated them for so many years, they did reunite, and they lived happily. They did. I think it was very hard for my mother to assimilate into American society, the language. We were grown up. We weren't children anymore. We spoke another language. And one time my mother said to me, Bozena, what is this big deal with a turkey in America? That was so foreign to her, I had to explain the history of why we observe Thanksgiving. But now that, you know, I'm a grandma now, but I understand women, I understand my mother much better now, what she was thinking, like when my father tried to pull some strong stuff with her. This is my mother telling me the story. She said to my father, Victor, you're talking to a new Jane. I'm not the same Jane you left in Germany during the war. I'm not the same person.
Tell us about the book. Well, first, tell us about Inga, and then tell us about the book and how that developed.
Inga and I met at a high school in Nassau County at a Holocaust symposium. I heard her story, she heard mine. We were invited as survivors to come and speak to the students. And over coffee, Inga comes to me and she says, Bozena, you know, your story is like mine. I said, no, Inga, your story is like mine. I was being funny. So we became friends, even though we lived far apart. She's in Queens and I was in Nassau County. We stayed in touch, we talked, and she wanted to do a program with me together, you know, something. I just couldn't get myself to do that. I just didn't want to open that door. So I hesitated. I hemmed and hawed, you know, I didn't want to do it. And then we retired and we moved, my husband and I, we moved. And she came to visit me for a weekend, and she starts this time on a book. I said, Inga, I don't want to do this. Please think of something else. I just don't want to do a book. I don't want to. We went for a walk, and it was towards the evening. The sun was in back of us. It threw a shadow in front. And I'm shorter than Inga, and I stepped up to equal our heads. And I said, Inga, look, our heads, we're the same. And she says, girl, that's what I've been trying to tell you. We are the same. And hence the book was born after that. I couldn't argue anymore. She got me.
So you had both been working with student groups on Holocaust education. Can you tell us how you got into that?
In my church in Garden City, we were observing Kristallnacht. And our church was observing Kristallnacht. The Jewish community in their synagogues was observing Kristallnacht their way, okay? And they needed, in my church, they needed someone who was there during the war. And I didn't identify myself. I came home and I told my husband, I'm not going to tell them. And my husband insisted, go back, tell them who you are. And anyway, I did. And I was asked to say a few words in church. I think they gave me 3 minutes or something like that. And in church, there was some politicians, senators, congressmen. And the next day, the town of Hempstead called me into the office. And a young man comes and sits next to me, and he says, were you summoned to come in? I said, yeah. I said, are you? He said, yeah. Do you know why? I said, no clue at all. I have no clue. A few moments, they call us in. I'm sitting next to a young rabbi from Port Washington, I think he was. It seems that, that there was a press there.
Oh.
They took pictures of us, and I wound up in the local paper, and school started to call me, please come and tell us, tell our children your story. And that was 26 years ago.
What kinds of school groups do you speak to? How old are they?
It's been recommended that they should be sixth grade and up. Anything less than that, it's that they don't comprehend. Fifth grade, it's very hard for them.
So have you also done high school? I mean, have you spoken with high school?
And universities, churches, synagogues.
Well, what kind of reactions have you gotten from these kids?
Students? Well, the teachers tell me that they listen to a human being better than when it's required book reading. They identify. One student in Georgia came to me after I spoke and he said, would you mind, I'm going to be an author too. And I'm going to dedicate my first book to you because I met you. Well, then maybe he learned something. Maybe he did. I think the most amazing thing was one school. They were middle school students. A young girl, I don't know what I said, but I used the word shame. She raised her hand and she asked, what does the word shame mean? Now, to me, at my age, my goodness, I sure know shame, you know. But a 13-year-old didn't know what shame meant. All right? That was really hard for me to swallow.
What language was the book written in?
Originally in English. Then we had it done in Polish. In Poland it was done. And then it was done in Germany in German. So it's, and it is being used as a teaching tool in school to teach the children about hate. You can't be complacent and say, oh, yes, a tragedy affected only Jewish people. That doesn't work. That doesn't work.
If our listeners are interested in buying the book, is it available online? Is it available on Amazon?
Amazon has it. Yeah. And a better way to do that, you can ask Barnes & Noble. They'll get it for you. It's cheaper that way. Mm-hmm. Barnes & Noble.
Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out? I know you gave a rather long lecture today, and it was very, very detailed, and we just don't have time for you to tell us everything, but is there anything else that you think is important that you would like to add?
Oh, my. I would like our young people in America to see the evils of hate, what it does. They just don't understand how far it could take us and destroy us as human beings. Sometimes, like somebody asked, why did God allow the Holocaust to happen to the Jewish people? That was a question posed to me. And my answer was, madam, God didn't allow it, we did. God gave us free will to choose between good and evil. Sometimes we forget. We choose evil.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.